Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice. We also have Dr. Kim Hayes, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, August the 21st, 2014. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes your show. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, dear heart. We are honored and blessed that each of you chooses to join us, each time that you choose to join us, as we take these principles and the ancient process of forgiveness and bring them forward to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And as we engage in that process of understanding forgiveness, we find that the whole process of the way we see the world changes. We start to see things differently. To go back into the ancient Aramaic, powerful tool is presented there for changing and improving the outcome of your mind, shifting and changing perception. And many people believe that perception is a fixed thing, that when we look out into the world, we're actually looking at what's happening out there in the world, where the authorities all agree, and if you start really looking at your life, your perception is a very active process, something that your mind injects huge, huge amounts of information. And one of the ways to tell that your mind is injecting something that isn't really there is that you have a tremendous amount of emotional attachment or emotional energy around whatever that particular issue is. So you're going along, enjoying your day, walking down the street, and everything is cool. And all of a sudden, let's imagine, you know, you walk past, you're in Times Square in New York, you walk past 10,000 people, you're chipper, you're happy, all is rocking along, you wave at people, you smile at people, you say good morning, you say good day, and, you know, things are just fabulous, beautiful, sunny day. All of a sudden, into your view comes a person it stole $100,000 from you 10 years ago. Now, the truth is, this is just another person that you're passing on the street. Does your perception remain the same as it remained with the other 10,000 people that you passed? Does something different happen in your body and in your mind when this 10,001st body passes by you? You better believe it does. What is injected, I mean, this body is no different than any other body. Absolutely nothing different. You've walked by and said good morning to 10,000 people. Well, maybe you're up to afternoon if you've passed 10,000 and said good morning. And all of a sudden, what happened to the chipper feelings? What happened to your perception? Something was injected into it. It's just another body, just like the other 10,000 you said good morning to. You say good morning to this 10,001st body. Or is there perhaps a whole range of feelings and thoughts injected into your perception? Whereas with 10,000 other people, it was a good morning and a hello and how are you and have a great day. All of a sudden, are you saying good morning, hello, how are you, and have a great day to the person who stiffed you for $100,000 10 years ago? Or is there some desire, as explaining the process of forgiveness this morning, and we dropped our van off for some repairs. The air conditioning went out on it yesterday. And I was explaining a little bit about the forgiveness process. And says, yeah, I said, you know, I find myself wanting to hurt people when they, you know, do something I don't like. So what kind of things come into your perception? What does your past, what emotions inject what kind of content into your perception now? Are you in that chipper mood, or do you want to hurt somebody? Do you want to grab somebody by the neck? Do you perhaps want to throttle somebody? Do you want to call the police because you finally found this person that stole $100,000 from you? What comes into your perception? And how distorted has the output of your mind become by what's resonated from the inside? So to recognize that the action of perception injects into our feelings, our emotions, literally the pictures that we see, gives us the opportunity to begin to clean up perception. There's a way you can tell if something is destroying your perception, if something is defiling or degrading your perception. There's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of data you can become aware of at that given moment is 9 bits of information. If your window on the world is only 9 bits large, does it make sense that you want to make sure to have the best information possible so that your guidance, your perception, gives you the highest and best that it can possibly give you? Well, the first clue that your mind is injecting something that defiles your perception, that degrades your perception, that takes you out of the highest and best available, is that there's some form of hostility or fear in your mind. Hostility or fear are energies that never belong within the human system, and whenever they are active, they inject into perception things that never belonged within your structure. And so to recognize the power of forgiveness, the power to clean up your perceptual mind, to remove the distorting factors so that continuously you have the best window on the world that you could possibly have. Go back into the ancient Aramaic. There was a time when they asked the Aramaic Yeshua, what's most important in the law? And guess what he told them? He said the first thing was, what fuels your perception? First order of business, what is it that drives your perception? Now, you couldn't tell that from the way the Greeks translated it. I wonder why they got rid of this level of understanding. If you can keep people in their muddle, if you can keep them in darkened minds, do they make great slaves and servants? Absolutely. All hostility and fear means your mind is lying to you. If you think hostility and fear is normal and it's somebody else's fault, then you can't ever clean up your hostility and fear-based mind, and it compromises your intelligence and capacity. When Yeshua answered the question, what's most important of all the teachings that were given? And Yeshua, if you're new to the show, is popularly known as Jesus, but his name was not Jesus. In Aramaic, it was Yeshua. His name was not Hail Zeus, a Greek idea or a Greek name, a Roman name. It was Yeshua. What he said was first and most important in the law, that is, in the way things work, not in men's rules and regulations, not in some authority's rules, but rather the first thing in order for things to work smoothly in your life, he said, was rachma. And then he gave two objects of attention. He said, you've got to have rachma for the creator and for your neighbor. And then he said a third thing, added a third piece to that puzzle. He said, in order to maintain self, if you're used to hearing quotes from those ancient scriptures, what you've heard that quoted as is, you must have love for the creator, for neighbor, as for self. Not at all what it says in Aramaic. What Yeshua is giving was instructions on how to keep your perception clean. So he says, have rachma, which is a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that keeps your mind in a position where it's fueled by love. And he said, you must maintain this condition in your mind when you think of the creator, when you think of neighbor, then as opposed to as yourself, it was in order to maintain self. So you maintain your human life and you maintain the highest possible perception when you maintain this condition in your mind. And of course, if you don't know that such a condition even exists, then good luck in maintaining it. If you study the Greek translations of Yeshua's words, there's not even a clue to what was most important in the whole body of understanding. And when you recognize that this is a body of law, of understanding how we work within the structure of the universe as it stands, then you realize that this is not about religion. This is about how to maintain clean, clear, pure relationships. It's about how to maintain your ability to create as you were designed to create an abundant, awesome, fabulous life. It's about being able to maintain everything that you're designed to have as a human being. If you go back, you hear Yeshua saying, I come to bring you life and bring it more abundantly. He didn't say, I come to bring you pain and suffering and fear and terrorism and bring that more abundantly. It was life. Life comes from staying connected to our human beingness. And the way we establish in this work what this human beingness is just hold the newborn child. When you hold the newborn, you know exactly what a human life is. It is this awesome, active presence of love. And so first and foremost, hold to this condition called love in your mind. And what you find is everything shifts because your window on the world is now purified of its hostility and fear. If you find that there's always a nagging hostility or fear that comes into your perception, then we have developed over the last 45 years a whole series of tools for how to keep your perceptual mind on track. And the number one tool is the tool of forgiveness. Forgiveness, not in the sense of you did something terrible to me, I'll let you off the hook for what you did to me. That has nothing to do with forgiveness. That's a Greek idea of pardoning. Nice thing to do, but nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness. Forgiveness is about the removal of the content that defiles your perception. Forgiveness is about removing what never belonged in your generations and never belonged within your structure, within your experience. So if you think in terms of removal every time you think of forgiveness, and it's an absolutely monumentally impactful tool if you'll actually put it to work. It's just amazing what it does. And so we invite you into the use of that tool. If you're not familiar with it, then you are most welcome to jump onto our website, www.whyagain.org. In the center of the page, you'll see a bullseye. If you click that bullseye will take you to a whole series of links. Here's the how-to of forgiveness. There are instructions there, where to start. Download chapter 24 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It explains the forgiveness process. The second link is the actual worksheet itself. And then there are about a dozen links with radio shows where we've walked somebody through the whole process of forgiveness. So we invite you to join us on this journey. We're delighted that you're here with us on the show. Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim with us?
Yes.
Well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how the young man be.
I'm doing quite well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Delighted. Glad you're here. What's exciting in your end, in your world? What are you seeing in the world of practice today?
Well, I've had three people already today who are just lividly angry about something somebody else did. And it was has been a wonderful day so far to set up teaching situations and share times in the recent past where I've been triggered and the tools I've used to dismantle that energy so that these people with very little experience in this realm could get their eyes open to the fact that if they have anger inside of them, it's their responsibility to clean it up. And if they think that the anger inside of them is caused by somebody else and they chase around to get back at that person, it's pretty much the same as drinking a glass of poison and waiting for the other person to get sick. And one situation involved a woman whose husband died. Another situation involved a woman who was falsely accused of something by a neighbor with a police report filed. Another situation was somebody who had what they thought was a dream job and they got railroaded out of it. And another situation was somebody that was very sad or upset that their child was going off to college, and they think that what they're experiencing is being caused by all these outside events. So I'm sitting here with a lot of gratitude resonating in me that I have a set of practical tools along with a set of observations about how the system really works that I can share with these people, and happy to report that three out of three people today have felt better simply by applying some of these tools, canceling some goals, doing some breath work, tapping, and they're just beginning that process. They're just beginning the journey. It'll take them to a happier, more loving experience of life. So I'm sitting here resonating a lot of gratitude.
I understand. I hear you loud and clear. And, you know, when people first start on this journey, I find it really interesting that they simply haven't, and of course I'm speaking of myself here because I can remember times when I had no idea that there was a difference between what my mind was showing me and what was actually out there. And no awareness of how much my own mind injected into the process. It's just, you know, it is mind-boggling when you realize that, and that people can't tell the difference because we've been bamboozled. We have been taught how this mind works, that we can't tell the difference between what's inside and what's actually there outside. It just amazes me that that we get stuck in that cloud of not knowing, the cloud of darkness, where the mind injects things that most people have no idea are strictly from themselves, about themselves, and of course the opportunity to heal themselves. So I certainly join you in the gratitude of having that knowledge, because I certainly remember when I couldn't tell the difference and didn't know any better. It certainly was a tough way to live.
Yeah, I have the same experience, and routinely people ask me, why do you still do this? Why aren't you done yet? And I say, well, because it just keeps getting better. It isn't exactly fun all the time. But I can guarantee you this, I've been a results-oriented person most of my life, and if it wasn't making my life better, I wouldn't be doing it. I wouldn't be on the radio show or hosting the group or expanding my office so that I can start offering groups. If it wasn't improving the quality of my life on a regular basis, I certainly wouldn't be recommending it to others.
I hear that loud and clear. Well, it's certainly an awesome journey, and we're blessed to be on it, and I feel blessed to be on it with you, Jeannie, with all the folks who choose to join us. Rex just arrived at Heartland last night, and unfortunately, you know, we were planning to be there, But unfortunately, our van popped a hose or something in the air conditioner, and we're supposed to pick people up at the airport tomorrow. So about the time Rex got there, we stayed long enough to say hello and welcome and feed them, and then Ari fed them, actually, and we got on the road to come to Springfield while it was cool because we had no air conditioning. And so we drove up last night and got the car into the shop this morning. So hopefully we'll be hearing from them shortly, and we'll be able to drive an air-conditioned car to the airport tomorrow to pick folks up that are arriving for the intensive. And the intensive that starts tomorrow is Laws of Living, the 16-day intensive, and we're just ready to rock with that. We're going to have nine active teachers in one intensive, which never had before, which is pretty awesome. So I'm looking forward to how the energy is going to rock and move. It's going to be pretty fabulous. So if anyone is ready and close enough that you want to come join us, we start tomorrow evening. We'll have served dinner. We'll have an awesome dinner tomorrow night. Ari's been just cooking up, putting together all kinds of pretty awesome foods. And he's going to be with us for another week. He's been with us all summer. We've been really blessed with the food that he's prepared. And so we've got another week of food with Ari, and then we'll be moving forward through 16 days of Laws of Living before we get on the road, and we'll be heading in your direction within a week or two of finishing the intensive. So looking forward to getting up there and spending some time with you and folks in Woodstock, Illinois, and surrounding area.
We're looking forward to it.
Yay. All right, well, Jeannie, do you have anything in the chat room that we should be aware of? By the way, we did hear from Peacemaker, and he says things are just moving along very well. He's in the chat room. What do you want to share with anything that he's saying? I'm delighted to hear that all of the diagnoses are moving in the direction of health and healing and wholeness, and that things are moving for you, Peacemaker. We're glad to have you here, and years of support of being here holding the faith. And we do the same for you.
And Michelle and I both were telling him that now he needs to clear that mask so they don't try to take his lung. And
sure.
So he said that's absolutely what he's working towards. He wants to keep his lungs. So some of the conversation in the chat room has just been about the laws of the universe. And since we're coming up on the law of the living intensive, and nobody has their hand up, so perhaps you'll just talk about what the laws of living are, what the laws of the universe are.
Sure. And Peacemaker, I'd support you in maybe doing a few worksheets around, having been brought into the world with lung challenges. I was almost dead 3 or 4 times the first year of my life. I wasn't supposed to live through the first night of my life because of lung challenges and lung problems, and having lived on an inhalator and pills for 25 years, the core turning point for me in the function of my lungs, and that is I had so many allergies and so many lung problems that I couldn't even be near someone who, for instance, was cutting a lawn, or my body would just go crazy. And from one day to the next, when I got in touch with time at about 3 years of age, where my father belittled me and forced me into a corner with belittlement, that getting in touch with that and forgiving that energy of being belittled is what turned things around. And at that time, I was in the restaurant business, and I had a 5-acre kind of an estate around this restaurant. And I went out and got on the tractor and cut 5 acres of lawn without a sneeze, without a wheeze, without a problem. And so if that's supportive, and the forgiveness process of moving in and looking on another level at what's stored there, we certainly hold the space. Any support we can be, we are absolutely here to do that. And our calling number is 646-200-4169. If you are new to the show and you have a question for us about this whole process of forgiveness, about the whole idea of what's it all about, Elfie? And our root of our work is first century Aramaic language. For those who might not know it, I'm the director of a foundation that's translating a copy of the oldest known New Testament in its original Aramaic language. And what attracted me to that text and attracted me to this work is, with a background in electronics and a side study in physics, what was very apparent to me when first starting to deal with the first century Aramaic language is that it was a physics language. It was a psychological language. It is a genetic language. It is a physiological language. And when you start to look in depth to the Aramaic, you start to see that they simply understood how life, how the mind, how emotions work. It's just amazing, the depth of knowledge, and far deeper than anything that I've found in the world today. It just is mind-boggling and mind-healing when you start to use it. And they talk about brainwashing. Well, first century Aramaic forgiveness is brain cleansing. And when you look at the way the world is operating today, most people have never washed their own minds. And it would be akin to someone who says, you know, I'm 40 years of age. I've gotten up every morning for the last, 37 years since I was big enough to do it. And I've washed my body. I've showered and washed every day. And so I think I've washed my body enough, and therefore I think I shouldn't have to do it anymore. Well, anybody who would do that, well, let's just say things wouldn't be very pleasant within a very few days. And in precisely the same way, there are tools for washing, cleansing, keeping your mind and your perception clean. If you don't have those tools, that's very much like the person who doesn't have soap and water and doesn't wash the bodies. Things get pretty raunchy pretty quickly. If you look at what's running our world, it's minds that are based in hostility or fear and have no idea how to wash themselves, how to cleanse themselves. And so you look around at the insanity that's going on, the hate, the fear, the rage, the guilt, the hurt, the pain, the sorrow, the drama, the trauma. And it's all a product of our own not knowing. To be restored to knowing is what comes from using the tools that remove the clouds from the mind, that remove the darkness. Now you hear Yeshua when he talks about perception, making the statement that the eye, and of course we'll do the long form here, the eye, which of course is not your physical eye, but is perception. Perception, says, is the light for your earthly life. In other words, in moving through the world, you get this window on the world, and it's meant to light or guide you on your path through the world. And then he says, if the light for you is darkness, what does that mean? He's saying that if your perception is filled with either hostility or fear, in Aramaic, that's darkness, then he asks the question, how deep will your darkness become? What kind of crazy things have you done to your children, your spouse, yourself, people around you, out of your unwashed mind, out of your hostility or fear? And so in essence, what he's saying is that our obligation is to clean up our perceptual mind. And that means, and you know, we may be the first generation, who knows how many, we've got times in history when people didn't think about washing their bodies. And I can only imagine it was pretty raunchy. But we became civilized, and, you know, most everybody washes pretty much every day. And now we live in a time when people don't wash their minds. It is raunchy. Actually, it's far raunchier than the world of people who didn't know how to wash their bodies. Because at least then, you know, basically you had to put up with some flies and smell. But that was it. Today, because people don't know how to wash their minds, we put up with rage, with guilt, with grief, with fear, with child abuse, with terrorism, with murder, with war, with divorce, with conflict, with strife, that we put up with in our world. And, you know, we've gotten to the point when Yeshua says, if the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? when we're raised in darkness, we think that darkness is normal. I know over the years I've had so many people who, you know, come from abusive family system where, let's say, for instance, physical abuse was a daily occurrence. And I've had them say to me as adults, you know, I didn't realize that wasn't normal. I just thought that was life. You look around at what's happening in our political system, in our military system. You look around at what's happening in our courts, between businesses, between spouses, between parents and their children, and it's all the product of an unwashed mind. Our goal with this work is to make the tools available and to get people to realize that a daily washing of your mind is far more important than the daily washing of your body. And it's washed through forgiveness. We literally wash this mind by applying the tool of forgiveness. If you come from 1,000 generations of people who never knew such a thing was possible, then you perhaps are the first one in 100 generations or more that has conceived of the fact that it's possible. What would your life, what would your world be like if you scrubbed your mind of all rage, of all guilt, of all grief, of all hatred, of vengeance, of terror, of trauma, of sadness, of loss? What would it be like if you weren't capable of those experiences? Now you say, well, oh, no, Michael, you don't understand. Those experiences are caused by what's outside. You know, if someone dies, of course, I have great grief and loss. I'd offer that you've never had grief or loss because somebody died. You've had grief or loss because there was grief or loss in you. And when you scrub your mind of those things, something different happens. Well, I'm only angry at my spouse because of what he or she said or did. No, you're angry at your spouse, or your mind tells you you're angry at your spouse. It's a lie. It's one of the lies of the unwashed mind. You're not angry at your spouse because of what they did or didn't do. You're angry because there's anger in you. You're sad because there's sadness in you. You're in fear because there's fear in you. And all of those energies can be removed. It's called forgiveness. So we're here to make the technology of first century Aramaic forgiveness. If you go back in the ancient Aramaic, the word heart is a code word for the unconscious. And you hear Yeshua saying, you must forgive from your heart the wrongs of your brother. What he was saying is, you have to go into your own dissociated state, your own unconscious mind, and remove what you've put into your brain's image of your brother, what your process of active perception has put into your brain's image of them that has you thinking that what you're seeing is actually them and what you're feeling is about them. You know, one of my favorite tongue-in-cheek lines in the workshop is, if they're the one with the problem, why am I the one with the pain? Obviously, if I'm the one with the pain, I must be the one with the problem. But if I'm talking about them, talking about them, talking about them, while I'm in pain, am I functioning out of an unwashed mind that projects my pain into my brain's image of my brother and has me believe that it's about my brother? You know, the ancient scriptures talk about there come a time when the whole world will be fooled, and we're pretty much there. The wake-up call is, if I experience grief, am I willing to wash my mind of grief? If I experience rage, am I willing to wash my mind of rage? If I experience fear, am I willing to wash my mind of fear? There are tools, there is technology for doing that, and it's been hidden for 2,000 years. We're here to restore it, and we're glad you're here to help us do it. Our call-in number, 646-200-4169. Jeannie, do we have anything happening in the chat room or anybody with a hand up? If I had just finished presenting what I've just presented, if I just walked off the platform and spoke about what I've just spoken about, and you were live, you were there in the audience live, as I walked off the platform, what would your question be of me? I know you've got one. What is it you want to refine in the way of knowledge, of understanding in this arena? And as I walk down the stage, as Dr. Tim walked down the stage and shared what he shared a few minutes ago, what would your question be of him? And if you push one, no waiting, you'll be first in the line, in the phone queue. And the lifeblood of the show is your questions. And there's no such thing as an inadequate question or a silly question. Sometimes the most basic questions are the ones that get us back on track best. Because when we reach a certain level, we can kind of tend to forget the basics. And so some very basic questions can be a great reminder from time to time for moving through those layers of energy that never belong within us. So what would your question be if I and Dr. Tim were walking off the stage? What would you want to know from us? How can we support you? 646-200-4169. And if we don't have a hand up, then I'll just say that, you know, Laws of Living starts tomorrow evening, if you care to join us. And once we finish Laws of Living, which is a 16-day intensive here at Heartland, then we'll be heading to St. Louis. We'll, on the 14th of September, we'll be doing a free Wise Just Happening to Me Again workshop at a place called the Newman Center at Washington University. And so you'd be certainly welcome to come and join us if you're in the St. Louis area. From there, we're going to head up to Woodstock, Illinois. We're going to be at Unity of Woodstock for a week. We'll do a Sunday service in the 21st. Why Is This Happening to Me Again in the afternoon? Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, all free workshops. And then on Saturday, there is one workshop when we travel that we do charge a fee for. It's called Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So we'll be doing that Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing in Woodstock, Illinois, the 28th. And then from there, we're heading down. We're still working on some things in Naperville, Illinois. So we'll see how that comes together. We're also working on my brain wrapped around Wilmington, North Carolina. So as we finish up, we'll be heading to Grand Rapids, Michigan, then to Lansing. We've got a 9-day intensive in Pinckney, Illinois, starting the 31st of October. And then we're working toward setting some things up in Wilmington, North Carolina, and then heading south to Florida. So keep an eye on our schedule. Keep up with us. If there's anyone that you know in any of those cities, we'd appreciate it if you'd drop them a note. You know, go to the website, grab a copy of the flyer, send it to them, invite them. 99% of the workshops are free. We're here to support. Purpose of our radio show is to support you being successful at using the tools of forgiveness, understanding how those tools work, and how to bring them into your world in very practical, real ways, as Dr. Tim was speaking.
So, Michael,
how do I wash my mind? Yes, sir. Go for it.
When you do the still point breathing in Woodstock, do you have any idea what you want to cap the number at?
30.
At 30? Okay, because I've got about six people already who've contacted me and said they want to reserve a space, and you haven't even been to town yet.
Oh, cool. That's awesome. That would be wonderful. If you want to just have them go ahead and confirm by giving you a check, that would be cool. And we'll look forward to watching how that group comes together. And the whole week, I'm excited and delighted to be coming back. There's, you know, the work you've been doing with people, so many people who've grounded themselves in the principles, it'll be awesome to share the space with that group.
Well,
we're
doing our best to spread the word and build the excitement, so we're looking forward to it.
For sure. And we've got about, let's see, what have we got? 20 minutes left, so... We've got questions. We've got space for questions. And if you're in the audience and, you know, you may have a little bit of fear about pushing one on the phone. You know, if your voice might, I'm on the radio, my voice will be shaky. I might just let that go and ask your question. How can we support you? What do you want to know about first century Aramaic forgiveness and or all of the corollary tools? How can we support you in the use of those tools? One of the most powerful dynamics to me that unfolds ending the whole process of forgiveness is the dynamic of codependence. So one of the intensive, or one of the workshops, we do it as an intensive, but as a single, you know, 2.5 hour standalone workshop. And I'm not sure whether that's on the schedule for Woodstock or not, but codependence to interdependence steps into looking at the dynamic of what we call a power person in your life and how the power person's behaviors have impacted and, for most people, become the root driver for their whole lives. The goals they had for their power person, the way that people wanted to be treated, the behaviors that they learned from the power person are behaviors that tend to drive people's lives all throughout, to inject into perception a distorted view that justifies the behaviors of the power person and carries those behaviors out. And once you recognize that and you begin to forgive as to those dynamics, you know, it's interesting when you go to the Aramaic language, nowhere in the Aramaic does it ever say forgive your brother. The Greeks missed two little words that changed the meaning of everything. So as opposed to forgive your brother, what it says is forgive as to your brother. Now, we could say forgive as to your spouse, forgive as to your child, forgive as to your parent, forgive as to your employer, forgive as to your neighbor. What does as to mean? Well, in Aramaic, you would never be invited to forgive another because you can't. Forgiveness isn't about letting somebody else off the hook. So when one is said, you know, when it said forgive as to, what it's saying is that in your interaction with your brother acting as a stimulus, your spouse, your child acting as a stimulus, resonated something that you inject into your perception of them, that you come to believe is about them, belongs to them, but you're feeling the effects of it. And so when you add those two words as to, what it's saying is, in interaction with your brother, what did your brother bring up in you? Oh, fear? Then I apply forgiveness to my fear as to what my brother brought up in me. I don't apply forgiveness to my brother. And that's a dynamic that's just been totally, completely lost through bringing the original Aramaic words into a Greek translation that did not comprehend the subtleties and the depth and the power of what was being taught. While everyone admires and acknowledges the Greek culture for all the wonderful things that it created, you'll notice that it created out of a set of gods who were some of the most horrific creatures that ever existed. And those things are reflections of the attributes of the mind, of the attributes in the minds of the populace. And so, as opposed to emulating those gods, what one wants to do is go in, and if there's an attribute that matches those gods, you forgive as to that attribute, and therefore you remove, you cleanse your own perception of that particular attribute. And so, you know, many of the Greek stories go into the, you know, the this god that was jealous of that. And so if we've been trained in jealousy, and I'm jealous of my spouse, I'm not jealous of my spouse, but I have this energy of jealousy in me that I project into my brain's image of my spouse. And as I cleanse the organ of perception, as I wash my own mind and remove my jealousy, all of a sudden, I now get a clear picture of my spouse that is not any longer tainted by that energy called jealousy, or hate, or rage, or vengeance, or anything else that goes on in our lives. So we're here to create support or the understanding of how that process is done and how to bring about a total complete shift in the way that you live and in the way that people respond to you. So often we have no idea that we are deep participators in what we perceive in our world, and that our behaviors tend to bring about exactly what it is that we rail against. And if we never see that, if we never go in and forgive those behaviors that bring about what we rail against, then we're going to tend to get stuck in those dynamics. Forgiveness changes that game and gives us the opportunity to do something different. And so that's what we're here to support, doing something different. And our call-in number, 646-200-4169. Everybody's so quiet today. I don't get it. What's going on? That everybody's so quiet. Oh, we've got a hand up. Cool. Let's say hello. 541,
Hi.
You are on the air.
Hi there.
Hey there.
Can you hear me?
How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. This is... Yeah, good. Okay, because I keep getting reports that my headphones or my speakerphone or my phone does not work. So it's working now. It must be time for me to communicate.
There you go.
Michael, yes, I'm here. Wait, I'm here.
I'm listening.
Now,
you're loud
okay,
and clear.
Great.
Go for it.
This is Julie from Ashland, Oregon. And Michael, I had a lesson yesterday that I still, I haven't gotten it fully, but I'm aware that I create abandonment in my life by setting up others to abandon me, when really I abandon myself by not following through on, for example, an agreement with them. And the agreement was set up to help me. I asked for help on something, and then I didn't follow through and do my part. And so they basically gave up on me, like, well, you know, what can I do? You're the one that's going to have to do your life. And that's all true, and I know that. But I do have from childhood and power persons and so this was with my brother, and I have resolved it with him. So, but we got into kind of a yelling match that was a total imitation of what my parents did, and it was just amazing to see that. And then, you know, so, I mean, the unconscious driving goals, you know, are there still, and I do have some work ahead of me to clear them out. But at least I was able to recognize and take responsibility for my creating the whole thing. That was the big
That's
thing.
Powerful.
That was a big deal. So what I needed, you know, because of the unconsciousness, I needed somebody out there to you know, draw the line for me and be a power person and take that role and say, you know, I'm not going to do this anymore, and here you have to do this. And, you know, I was still being driven by someone needing my need, my goal, for someone out there to tell me what to do, and then rebelling against it, and then creating abandonment. So it's pretty amazing how it's so intricately wired, and even more amazing that it can be undone.
Yes, so
I'm in the undoing.
When you look at,
yes.
I take it that since it was a yelling match, the primary emotion was hostility.
I came out with some really weird things from my mouth too, again, and, you know, very attacking, and he was attacking, and we were using our highest and best philosophies. He comes from AA, and I come from my highest spiritual studies, right, and yet they were used as weapons to kind of attack, and so I saw the need to clean that up. Anyway.
Well, seeing through the dynamics of a power person, we can take anything and use them as a weapon. Many people use religion as a weapon to beat up on and keep people in fear. Many people use all kinds of different tools to produce that same result, and what they're doing is simply following their power person dynamic. So the thing I would invite you to do is to look at, if you haven't already done that, the next level down, because hostility is always a drug. Hostility is secondary to something else. There's pain that I don't want to deal with, and I use hostility to keep that pain covered. Have you looked into what that pain is about that you would, with the knowledge that you have, go into hostility with your brother?
Not yet. Thank you. I know that I...
So this would be a
there
good
is... Thing. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, there is... there. I knew I was just touching the surface of something, you know, that I was even able to see how I was creating abandonment. So, and lately my worksheets have been getting more close to pain and being okay with feeling pain. Yeah, there's a lot of pain that I've really been trying to hold back, and it's time for me to feel that, yes.
So if you were to look into the moment where the anger crescendoed for you, were you at your most hostile moment speaking to your brother about your, at that moment, so-called spiritual philosophy? If you took a breath, I mean, think about literally the words that were being spoken, and you took a breath, what was it that you were wanting from your brother?
Well, I wanted him to help me.
You wanted him
to
help you?
Right. I mean, ultimately, I wanted him to really support me in what was really going on, which he did because he has some skills. So he was doing a tough love kind of thing, you know, in a rather tough way, which I didn't like. And let's see, my pain was that I wasn't being heard, and I had to do it his way. You know, I recognized he's doing AA on me, and okay, I know that works, and that's fine, but I attacked him with a thought of, you know, you're just doing AA on me. You're being a sponsor. And I was attacking his strength because I didn't want him to be stronger than me, because I didn't want to give in to my pain, you know, and yet ultimately I wanted that strength because I wasn't doing it myself. I wasn't finding it anywhere else. So I had to create it outside of me, it seemed.
So if you look at the dynamics that ran between in your family system with your power person, did they waver from wanting something and then not wanting it, pushing it away, that love-hate type relationship?
Oh, yeah, I have that. I have that so much of really wanting something and then not letting myself have it because I don't deserve it, or I've been told, no, you can't, you know, or there's not enough money. In fact, I'm touching in on how badly I wanted to come to your workshop. And so
you got to come badly, right? You got exactly what you asked for.
I got what?
You got exactly what you asked for. You got to come to the workshop badly. You didn't make it.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, and I went
good
immediately
breath,
to
breath.
Denial. Denial. I denied that I wanted it. I've always stepped away from what I've really wanted. I've had a pattern of that.
And you step away from what you want because?
Because I'm told I can't have it. I'm told by a power person conditioned thought in myself that I project.
And your brother was reinforcing that?
Yeah. Yeah, and then I layer on.
The specific goal you had for your brother, what was it?
I just wanted some compassion and non-judgment or non-trying to fix me, just, you know, the actual compassion instead of the hard-nosed, this is what you have to
do. Compassion and acceptance.
Yeah, and yet I know he wasn't buying into me being a victim. So I know I need, you know, I don't want Well, I do. I am trying to engage people into believing I'm a victim so that I can create, you know, abandonment or, you know, I don't get what I just said, but I'm doing something like that.
So would you be willing to cancel your goal for your brother to have compassion for you and acceptance?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and do that.
Okay. I canceled my goal and my need for my brother to have compassion and acceptance of me, for me. Oh.
Where's your mind just go?
I just went to this sort of helpless, hopeless place that I used to have when I was punished by having to stay in my room for 4 days. And all I did was clean and organize my room. And now I live in a mess that I rebel against organizing. It's so painful to live in this prison I've created. And I've immobilized myself.
So notice that the pain you drop into when you cancel your goal hasn't got anything to do with your brother. Notice where your mind goes when it moves to the next step down, and it goes into the knowledge that you've created a prison for yourself and the pain that you've
And
so notice that this, all this pain that's going on doesn't have to do with your brother. So forgive from your heart that which you put into your brain's image of your brother.
Right. Yeah, I do. I truly love my brother. I truly have a resonance in me for the love that is true between my brother and I.
Good. And then
I love that.
tapping into the goal that, you know, that immediately when you canceled the goal for him, you tapped into some goals that you weren't achieving for yourself. And so in that conversation about having put yourself in a prison and not being willing to organize and get things set up, what would the goal that you had for yourself be in that situation?
to be free, you know, and I also have seen that I am imitating my father, who used to lock himself in his office with tons of piles of paperwork and stuff. So it's an isolation. Oh, God, I don't know what your question was.
Breathe.
What is my goal for myself?
Yes.
To be free. I just want to be free. Yeah, I never knew when I was free because I was punished. And I never knew when I was free. I just kept dilly-dallying around with stupid stuff in my room until finally I was let out. And I can't seem to get that kind of stuff done anymore these days because it's triggering all this pain. So my goal is that I can get my life back in order, get through the clutter and the pain.
We're down to the last few seconds as you breathe into that pain, and I'd invite you to cancel your need to be able to clean up all of the clutter and get your life organized.
Okay. Oh,
and
God.
Watch what the next layer down is. I'd invite you to pick up a worksheet. We do have to close the show, so I'd invite you to pick up a worksheet and put that goal on the sheet and do that worksheet around yourself, and let's continue the conversation tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, we hold you in the blessing.
Thank you so much.
We thank everybody for joining us for the show, and bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. In the meantime, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving, continuing.
sleep.